Welcome to the Full Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 6:18 Greenwich Mean Time. Today is February 12th. And today, of course, being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. First, let's have a review of what's been happening this week. And we continue to see that the majority of stock markets are in the region of their 200-day moving averages. Some are a little bit below, some are a little bit above, but the general tone of the market is that they're testing the 200-day moving averages. The reversion towards the mean has been completed for the vast majority, and the question now remains as to whether they're going to find support in the region of these 200-day moving averages and rally or range above this area or around this area, or are they going to move on to post further downside. And in the last couple of weeks, we've written a number of articles, and we've put a 40% chance that they're going to find support in the region of the 200-day moving averages and move on upwards and reassert the overall medium-term uptrend. About 40% chance that they're going to range in zombie-like fashion in around current levels, and a 20% chance that they're going to break to the downside. And of course, we are going to have markets. We're going to have some markets that find that fulfill just about all of these. But the more important ones, of course, are the larger caps. And of those, Wall Street is by far the most important because of the Wall Street leash effect. As we close out the week, the Dow Jones is in the region of 10,000. The S&P is in the region of 1,070. And they haven't quite reverted to their means just yet, but they did show signs this week that it's not all one-way action and that there still remains ample opportunity for them to find support in the region of their 200-day moving averages, which we use to define the mean, and sustain their medium-term bullish environment, which is likely to be characterized this year by a fair amount of ranging, given the size of the advances that we saw last year. Elsewhere in markets this week, we saw that the Eurozone experienced a degree of volatility because there was wide expectations that the European Commission would come out with some sort of aid package or plan to support the Grecian economy, and that plan was a bit light on detail. And of course, the Europeans are treading very carefully in this environment, because the last thing they want to do is to be seen as a soft touch for high deficit countries. If that were the case, then there would be a lesson learned for irresponsible governments, that all they would have to do to gain an aid package would be to take on as much debt as possible, get themselves into the biggest possible problem they could, and ensure that they were going to get a bailout from their better off northern neighbors. And that is something, of course, the Europeans are going to be at pains to avoid. So they're going to have to be seen to turn the screws on the Greeks to some extent or another, but at the same time avoid any chance that they're going to default on their debt. That really does suggest that we're going to see the European economy, or and indeed the euro, move through a probably a fairly painful period where growth is fairly anemic. And it also suggests that monetary conditions are going to remain that bit easier for that bit longer in order to allow for the weak conditions that are evident right across southern Europe and in Ireland. In the commodity markets, well, because we had this weak euro environment, and the euro certainly was weaker this week, particularly against some of the stronger currencies such as the commodity producers, or perhaps that is more accurately or broadly described as countries that have trade surpluses. The euro was particularly weak this week, and against the Canadian dollar, I've posted that chart in here today. It now appears to be accelerating lower. So while the dollar was reasonably firm this week and remains in an uptrend against the euro, it wasn't as strong against some of the other currencies. And the Australian dollar bounced from its lows earlier this week and is currently around 88.5 cents. There is a short-term progression of lower rally highs, but We haven't had the kind of deterioration of the currency against the US dollar as we've seen in the euro, which is probably an indication of really just how different those economies are. This was also an interesting week from the point of view of government bonds, because we saw gilts pushing back above 4%, and they're weaker in here as well today. You don't have the same degree of weakness in US treasuries, and there's a considerable debate going on about whether government bonds are the short of the century or whether they are going to remain in this 30-year bull market. And the likelihood remains from the chart action that the accelerated decline in 10-year yields for the US, the UK, and a number of other countries last year was the low for that long downtrend in yields. What remains the open question is how long base formation development is going to take. What we do know, though, is that for the UK and the USA, if yields start to push above the 5% level for the UK or 5 to 5.5% for the USA, that is going to offer a fairly significant headwind to stock markets in particular, but potentially other risk assets as well. With just about any asset class, you have a number of risks that need to be factored in, and the government bond market tends to focus on inflation risk, but if the Greece or indeed the European example has taught us anything, it's that inflation concerns are not the only thing that can move government bond yields. And what we're seeing in the UK at the moment is that prices have declined somewhat and are going back now to test their January lows on the gilt. And we're seeing that 4% was an area of support for a long time before it broke down from that area in 2008. So pushing back above 4% is not an unreasonable expectation, but it's not going up there because we're seeing a marked return to inflationary pressures in the UK economy. It's happening more because there's the threat of an end to quantitative easing, and that's removing a bid from the market. So that is weighing on gilt prices and driving up the yield. So we have very simple supply and demand type issues. And of course, there is, with the Greek example, there is the risk of default, and regardless of quantitative easing, that would have a major impact on any government bond prices. Now, there is, of course, the massive difference between countries that can print their own currencies and countries that can't. Any one of the sovereigns in the Eurozone are now akin to something like one of the states in the USA. And if you take an example like Florida or California or New Jersey or New York, they're not capable of printing their own currency. If they were to default on their debt, they would almost certainly be bailed out by the supranational, which in the US's case would be the Fed, and in the EU would be the ECB, but then very stringent fiscal discipline would be imposed upon them, and we can anticipate something similar occurring in the case of a potential default in the Eurozone. However, when you then begin to compare that situation to something like the UK or the USA proper, then they are sovereign nations with their own currency. They can print it in abundance to, in other words, sacrificing the value of the currency to pay off the debt in an inflated currency, and that there is significant room for either of those countries to do just that. It's probably going to, well, the evidence that we've had over the last few years suggests that they are pursuing a three-pronged approach. They are devaluing their currencies while also attempting to narrow their budget deficits and give the pretense that they are attempting to get their houses in order, but certainly the weaker currency is helping them to do that, in that a weak currency helps the manufacturing base and helps those countries that are repatriating profits. So, with government bonds, the question to my mind remains one more of how long the base formation will take before we see significantly higher yields, rather than whether it's going to happen or not. Because we have this competitive devaluation in various currencies, and right now the Eurozone needs a weaker currency more than most, and that has certainly been reflected in cross rates. But there is a general questioning of the integrity of fiat money, because governments historically have been profligate in devaluing their currency and allowing a transfer of wealth from savers to creditors. And there is nothing that has happened in this crisis to suggest that anything other than that is happening right now. And that's the broad support for precious metals. Now, gold pulled back rather sharply from the $1,200 level. It's had a bigger pullback on this occasion than it's had following previous breakouts in 2007 and 2005. So that's an inconsistency. It's a relatively minor inconsistency from what had been an incredibly persistent and consistent uptrend over the last almost a decade. The other major consistency that we've had, and there are sound reasons that we can justify the size of the reaction that we saw back in 2008, but that big reaction during the credit crisis and the gold price pulled back into the previous range. And that's a major inconsistency. Now, the trend has been reasserted with the sustained move back above $1,000. But if gold were to sustain a move back below the $1,000 level, then that would be a second inconsistency, and that really would be a major inconsistency. So while we remain long-term bulls of the precious metal markets, and it is very easy to make the bullish case simply based on the loss of credibility of the fiat money, we do also have to deal with the reality that the market is providing. And what we've seen so far has been that gold has pulled back in a somewhat larger reaction. It found support in the region of the 200-day moving average, and that is also in the region of $1,040-something odd dollars. So it's well above the breakout point. And it rallied well this week, from basically or in the region of 1,050 up to test the $1,100 level earlier this morning. Provided it holds above the most recent low, which is in the region of the 200-day moving average, we can probably continue to give the benefit of the doubt to some further from for some further upside, which is likely to take the shape of a ranging uptrend. And we would really need to see it sustain a move back below the moving average and then below the $1,000 level to really begin to ask questions about the integrity of the almost decade-long bull market. We haven't had the kind of acceleration or gold fever that one would associate with the end of a major bull market such as this is. So I personally rate the possibility that the $1,200 peak for gold as being the absolute peak for this market at about 10%. In other words, I think there's a 90% chance that we're going to see gold move on to new high ground over the course of this bull market. But we also have to bear in mind that that could take some time, and that will not really be confirmed until we see it sustaining a move above $1,200. And again, that could also take some time in here. It was for that reason that I took my profit in short-term profit in gold today. I'll be looking to reaccumulate if I see it pull back further, and I believe there's a good chance that it will pull back a little bit further, because we are in a generally volatile, ranging trading environment, or what some people would refer to as a jobbing market. And that, I think, also applies to stock markets, where we do have an increased level of volatility, and the market is generally characterized by a large degree of ranging. Now, China's going to be closed next week for the New Year holiday, and let me wish anybody who's celebrating Chinese New Year, Gong Qi Fa Cai, and I apologize for my terrible pronunciation, but we continue to see that the engines for global growth are in the emerging markets. These are surplus economies, both in terms of their trade balances, but often in terms of their fiscal policy as well. And they're the engines of global growth. We have a massive bull story that has developed over the last decade, and that is the greatest urbanization in history. The entry of billions of new consumers onto the global stage, and it's changing the world in which we live. There is increased demand across the board for consumables. That's driving the bull market in the majority of commodities. What we've seen in the last few months is that soft commodities, in particular, due to either weather-related incidents or a return to global growth, have begun to set new highs. Sugar remains relatively close to its highs, although it has probably hit a medium-term peak. Cocoa, which is also one of the early leaders, appears to have topped out, at least in the medium term. On the other hand, cotton was limit up earlier this week and has been up for 5 consecutive days. It's been in a broad range since the 1970s, and that at the moment looks like a big, long, ranging phase, most recently from between 40 to 80 cents, but longer term from approximately 40 to 100 cents. But if that were to sustain a break above the 100-cent level, we would then be looking back on this long-ranging phase, not so much as a long-ranging phase, but we would be then looking at it through the lens of a new bull market, and we'd be characterizing it as a base. So cotton is certainly something to keep an eye on, and it is obviously also reflecting the weak monsoon that we had in India last year, which is a big low-cost cotton producer, and the return to global growth and the demand for cotton as an industrial commodity. Another industrial commodity that has done particularly well recently is lumber. It broke its 5-year progression of lower highs in November, consolidated that gain, and broke upwards again in the last few weeks. So it now appears to be in a new bull market. And while the rule that applies for commodities will apply just as much to cotton and lumber, in that we don't pay up for commodities, or we attempt not to pay up for commodities, and that they're best bought following reactions, this will apply equally to just about anything, but particularly to commodities, because they are prone to that volatility. And these are commodities that are not really on the radar of of the media particularly. And they do suggest that there is investor interest in this sector, and they are proving to be relatively non-correlated to what have become remarkably correlated markets. Because over the last 6 months, there has been a considerable evidence of an inverse correlation between the dollar and risk assets generally, such as stock markets, commodities, and corporate bonds. And that remains in place. It suggests that the dollar remains the funding or the favorite funding currency for carry trades. And that also indicates that since the dollar remains in an uptrend, particularly against the euro, but also against some of the destination markets for carry trades, then we need to be a little bit cautious about the ranging consolidations that a number of these markets remain in. And before the bull markets that have been evident for more than a year are reasserted, there's a chance, there is the strong likelihood, I think, that we do need to see the dollar getting weaker once more, which would help to take pressure off of some of those leveraged traders, which are a strong influence at the margin in a large number of risk-type assets. The greatest urbanization in history is driving the per capita consumption of commodities over the long term. So the challenge is for demand to meet this inexorable rise in demand. And that is proving more challenging, given the fact that we've gone through one of the biggest financial crises in history, and that credit is not really available in for companies and in probably more particularly farmers to produce or to increase their crop yields. And that could drive major bull markets in some of the agriculturals if we see weather related problems developing later this year. The grains in particular have been ranging for the better part of a year. They found support at what are really historically high levels in nominal terms. And that is suggesting that they are in need of a motivating factor to push them to significantly higher levels. But in the meantime, they are sustaining these ranges in the region of the upper sides of their long-term basis. And that's broadly bullish activity for a medium-term upside move, although perhaps not so much in the short term. The likelihood remains that with monetary conditions remaining extraordinarily accommodative, and with a number of economies in the OECD remaining under pressure, that we're going to see interest rates moving upwards at a slow pace. The threat of deflation, particularly in some of those weaker OECD economies or deflationary pressures, are likely to remain, but inflationary pressures will be seen first in commodities. We have already seen that, and in risk-type assets, and that's something that's likely to continue. And I think with that, I will leave you for the weekend and wish all the best to all of you.